All right. Good morning again, church. It's good to see you all still here. And if you came in this morning, I'd like to thank you for coming in here and hope that you're ready and willing to listen to and learn from God's Word. I want to thank you all again for the opportunity to speak with you. I want to take this time to consider the apostles of Jesus. Jesus gave the apostles a big job ahead of them. At the end of Matthew, what we typically call the Great Commission, Jesus says, "Go forth and make disciples out of all nations." And the apostles do that. In part, if they hadn't, we wouldn't be here. We are here 2,000 years later, in part thanks to all the work that those men did in the first century. But they weren't always those bold proclaimers of truth that we usually think of when we think of the apostles. As was read in the scripture reading for us earlier, in Matthew 14, before they were apostles, when they were just Jesus' disciples, they were cowering in a boat in the middle of the night, trying to get to the other side of the Sea of Galilee, and it's choppy, and the winds are blowing, and they see Jesus out on the water, and they think he's a ghost. And they're afraid. And those were the men that Jesus said, "You go and take my message to the world." They think he's a ghost when he's standing out there on the lake in the water, walking on the water, and they're in the boat and they call out to him, "Is it you?" And Jesus answers yes, and one of them, Peter, gets out of the boat and starts walking on the water toward Jesus. And if you're anything like me, and I'm sure a lot of you have thought about this, like, what got into Peter's head that made him think that he could do that? What was he thinking that made him believe that he could walk on water? Yeah, he sees Jesus there, but what made him think he could do it? And I think that this story makes a lot more sense when you consider the background, the historical and religious background of the Galilee area, and understand just what it means to be a disciple. Just to understand what Peter saw himself as. So let's consider, what did it mean to be a disciple to the average Jewish person in the first century? Jesus presented himself many times as a Jewish rabbi with Jewish disciples living in a first century Jewish world in the region of the Galilee. He also traveled through Samaria and Judea a couple of times. But so in the Galilee and in Judea, there were the Jewish people lived and worked, and they believed that God had spoken to Moses and that God had given Moses the first five books of the Bible, Genesis through Deuteronomy. They called it the Torah. And the word Torah means teaching or instruction or law or the way. And the Torah was the center and foundation of Jewish society. And it was the foundation of their lives. And it was also not only just the focus of their lives, but it was the focus of their educational system. So most boys and girls, Jewish boys and girls in the Galilean area, around 5 or 6 years old, they would go to school to learn the Torah. And it was most likely held at the local synagogue, wherever you lived, and it was taught by a local Torah teacher who was a rabbi. And this period of education, starting around age 5 or 6, was called Beit Sefer. And during Beit Sefer, most kids, boys and girls, would memorize the Torah. I want you to think, by age 10, they would have the Torah memorized. Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. Just memorized. Word for word. And by the end of age 10, most kids, if they got to the end, most kids were no longer going to school. They were either apprenticing or learning the family business, or for the girls, they were learning, they were starting to learn how to manage a household. But for the best of the best kids who got through Beit Sefer, there was a second level of education. Around age 10, they would then enter into Beit Talmud. And so only the best of the best, the kids that could keep on going to school and showed the most natural ability, would then go on to memorize the rest of the Hebrew scripture. Genesis through Malachi, memorized. Think about that. Now, okay, so now the best of the best, by the end of Beit Talmud, at age 14 or 15 now, have the whole Jewish scriptures memorized. But by then, even then, most of them have now gone off to apprenticing, learning the family business, learning a trade. But the best of the best of the best would then go on to the final amount of school called Beit Midrash. And at Beit Midrash, what you would do, you're 14, 15, you've come to the end of Beit Talmud, you would go to a rabbi that you respected, that you wanted to learn from, and you'd go and apply to that rabbi to become one of that rabbi's disciples. And when we use the word disciple, we usually mean the word student. And when we think of somebody's disciples, we generally mean somebody who knows what the teacher knows. But a disciple in Jewish society, a disciple of a rabbi, meant much more than just you learn what the rabbi knows or learns. You know what the rabbi knows. It means you want to be like that rabbi, that you want to learn to do what that rabbi does. And so different rabbis had different interpretations of the Torah. Not every rabbi agreed. So that's why you would find the rabbi that you agreed with, that you thought had the best interpretation of the Torah, and you said, I want to be like you. I want to learn how you understand the Torah. And so one rabbi would take a verse or a command from the Torah, and he would say, well, this is what it means to live out this verse. This is what it means to live out this command of God. Or another might say, no, I think it means something slightly different. I think it means this. Which, you know, obviously nobody does that anymore today. Bicker about what verses mean. Of course, it, just as common as it's today, it was back then. But different sets of rabbis had different sets of interpretations for how they understood and lived out the Torah. And a particular set of interpretations that a rabbi had was called a rabbi's yoke. And that, so if you're thinking about that, that starts to tie in some things that Jesus has said before. But so when you went to apply to a rabbi and become one of the rabbi's disciples, you wanted to take the rabbi's yoke upon you so that you could learn to know not only what the rabbi knows, but so you could learn to do what the rabbi does. And you'd go to the rabbi and you'd say, I want to be one of your disciples. And then the rabbi would grill you. He'd ask you questions about the Torah, and he'd throw out questions about the prophets. And he'd throw out questions about the oral tradition. And the reason that he'd grill you and he'd find out what you know and what you don't know is because he wants to know, can this kid, this 14, 15-year-old kid, can he do what I do? He's got to figure it out. So does this kid have what it takes to spread my yoke to other people? And so the rabbi would fire off all these questions. And if the rabbi thought, you know, this kid is good, but, you know, he doesn't quite make it. The rabbi would say something about, well, he'd say something like, you know, you obviously love God. You love the Torah. I can see that, but you know, you just don't have what it takes. Go and learn your family business. Go and ply your family trade. But if the rabbi thought, this kid, he's got something. He has got it. Then the rabbi would say, come, follow me. So you, if you are the best of the best of the best, and the rabbi sees that in you, and he's like, yes, that kid has got it. At 14 or 15 years old, you would leave your family, leave your friends, leave your synagogue, leave your village, and follow the rabbi. And you would devote your entire life to him, learning to do what the rabbi does. That's what it means to be a disciple. And so, in Jewish society, a traveling rabbi, you would see, if you were a Jew living in Galilee, you would see very often a rabbi coming into town, and he would come into town, and he'd have this gaggle of disciples behind him, traveling behind him, trying to keep up with the rabbi, and because they want to do and learn everything that they possibly can from him. And so you're traveling with the rabbi as a disciple on these dusty and dirty roads. And so at the end of the day, whatever your rabbi stepped in would get caked all over the front of you. And there was a saying developed among the wise men of the Jewish society that you would say to a disciple, to bless a disciple of a rabbi. And you would say, may you be covered in the dust of your rabbi. Because, and people knew what this meant. That meant that you were right there. You were right there, right behind him, learning everything you could possibly get, just so that you could just absorb everything, even the dust that he walked on. So if we understand, okay, how the Jews understood rabbis and disciples, this makes a little bit more sense when we understand Jesus and the relationship he had with his disciples. Now, most rabbis in Jewish society began their ministry as a rabbi, their teaching, around age 30. And it was around age 30 that Jesus started his ministry. And he's walking along the Sea of Galilee. If you would turn to Matthew chapter 4. Matthew chapter 4. Jesus is walking along the Sea of Galilee. And he comes across Peter and Andrew. Starting in verse 18 of chapter 4, it says, now as Jesus was walking by the Sea of Galilee, he saw two brothers, Simon, who was called Peter, and Andrew, his brother, casting a net into the sea, and they were fishermen. And he said to them, follow me, and I will make you fishers of men. And immediately they left their nets and followed him. So Jesus is walking along the Sea of Galilee, he sees Peter and Andrew, and he says, come, follow me. And they're fishermen. And Jesus calls them to be his disciples. So let's think about this. Peter and Andrew are fishermen. What does that mean? It means that they are applying a trade. They aren't following some other rabbi. They're not the best of the best. At some point, they didn't make the cut and had to go into the family business. And it says at all at once they drop their nets and follow Jesus. And that might seem a little bit strange. You say, well, you know, Jesus just comes and says, follow me, and they just go. And sometimes even if, like, you've seen movies, those movies don't really help either, because first off, it shows Jesus kind of like floating down the shore of the Galilee River, and he's in this white bathrobe with a beauty pageant sash across his chest, and his hair is blow dried, and he's Swedish, and he says to the disciples, come follow me. And they're kind of like robots, and they just kind of pivot and turn and just kind of follow him. But when you think about this in its historical context, in its cultural context, this makes sense. Because the rabbis were the most honored, most respected, most revered men in society, in their society. And only the best of the best of the best even got an opportunity to study under a rabbi as a disciple, much less become one. And so this rabbi, Jesus, comes down the beach and he says to you, come follow me. What is he really saying? What is Jesus saying to Peter and Andrew? He's saying, I think you can do what I do. I think you've got what it takes to be like me. So of course you drop your nets and follow him. Of course you do that. And Matthew continues on, and they come across James and John. They're fishing with their father Zebedee. Verse 20, immediately they left their nets and followed him. Going on from there, he saw two other brothers, James the son of Zebedee and John his brother, in the boat with Zebedee their father, mending their nets, and he called them. And immediately they left the boat and their father and followed him. Just like Peter and Andrew. They're fishing with their father. Where they're apprenticing. They're learning how to be fishermen. And what that means is that they're not disciples of some other rabbi. James and John are the not good enoughs for other rabbis. They didn't make the cut either. They aren't the best of the best. And I want you to consider this about what we know about Jesus' other disciples. Who Jesus says, come follow me, and I think you can do what I do, and you can be like me. And first consider, how old are these guys? Sometimes we think of the apostles as eternally 50 years old. But at this point, what are they? They're like maybe 14, 15, 16 years old. Maybe 20 tops. These are young men. And these are the men that Jesus says, you're going to change the world. Even later in Acts, Peter and John, when they're talking before the high priest and the Sanhedrin, they are identified. These are uneducated men. You have Matthew, a tax collector. He sided with the Romans. He was viewed as a traitor by a lot of Jews because he became a tax collector. He had an occupation as a tax collector associated with greed and theft. And he might have been seen as un-Jewish. On the opposite side, there was a disciple named Simon the Zealot. And the zealots are on the exact opposite political spectrum of Matthew the tax collector. The zealots were a violent anti-Roman, rebels. They were Jewish nationalists that wanted to violently overthrow the Roman Empire in Judea. You know, when we think the Tea Party, Occupy Wall Street has nothing on the zealots. The zealots meant business. And Jesus chose one of them to be his disciple. So who does Jesus call? Jesus calls the radicals. The people who had given up. The people who went into questionable places of business or associated themselves with questionable people. He chose the uneducated. He chose the not good enoughs. He chose the JV squad. He chose the B team, the third string. And he chose those people and he said, you can be like me. You can be my disciple. And it's those people, the not good enoughs, that changed the course of human history. So let's go back to the scene with Jesus walking on the water and Peter walks out to him. So there's these boats, this boat full of not good enoughs, this boat full of anybody's. And the waves are chopping and the wind is blowing and they're terrified because they see Jesus coming across the water and they think he's a ghost. And Peter calls out, "If it's you, Jesus, you tell me to come to you." So why does Peter say that? Because he's a disciple. His whole life has been oriented, dedicated to being like his rabbi, to following his rabbi. And so when he sees his rabbi walking on the water, the first thing that comes into Peter's mind is, well, if he can do it, then I can do it too, because I need to follow my rabbi. I want to be like my rabbi. So Peter gets out of the boat and he starts walking on the water. Turn to Matthew 14. And if you're not there, Matthew 14, he starts walking on the water and he then starts to sink after he walks out onto the water. And he cries out, "Jesus, save me." And verse 31 of Matthew 14, 31 says, "Immediately Jesus stretched out his hand and took hold of him and said to him, 'You of little faith, why did you doubt?'" What is Peter's doubt here? So many times I've heard this explained as Peter's doubt or lack of faith in Jesus. But Jesus isn't the one sinking. When Peter starts to sink, the first thing he calls out to is Jesus. Peter is not doubting Jesus at all. So who is Peter doubting? He's doubting himself. He's doubting his ability to follow his rabbi. He loses faith in himself. You know, Jesus wouldn't have called Peter if he didn't think Peter could be like him. Jesus even reminds his disciples at one point in John 15, verse 16, "You did not choose me, I chose you." The rabbi doesn't choose you unless he thinks you can do it. Unless the rabbi thinks you can be like him. And so we talk a lot about believing in God, and belief in God is important. But the more striking thing is that God believes in us. God wouldn't have called us unless he believed you can be like him. Paul says in Galatians 4 and verse 9, "But now that you have come to know God," or rather, to be known by God, which is an interesting statement that Paul makes. You know, we usually think about when we become Christians, when we start following God, that's the moment that we come to have known God. We come to know God. But Paul kind of switches it around and he says, rather to be known by God. Because God's been there the entire time. God's there whether we believe in him or not, whether we accept him or not. What really changed is our relationship with God. We know God, but rather we have become to be known by God. God's always known us, always believed in us. But to believe in God, in some sense, means to believe that I was made in his image. To believe that God knows me. So have you considered this? Not just your faith in Jesus, but Jesus' faith in you. Because Jesus has to have faith in you. Because he has faith in these disciples. He leaves it all in their hands. He descends to heaven and leaves it in these disciples' hands. He has faith that they can do what he set them out to do. And the last thing Jesus said to his disciples, "Go and make more disciples. Go and spread my yoke." He leaves it in the hands of these anybodies, these uneducated, B-teamers. And they do it. And so how do we think about that? God calls you and says, I believe you can do what I've given you to do. God believes it. The question is do you believe it? What if we can be the kinds of people that God created us to be? What if God believes that you can be just like Him? Think about that. What if God believes that you can be just like Him? What if He believes that you can be just like Jesus? And we can be the people that live like Jesus lived. God believes that. Jesus has faith that you can follow Him and you can be like Him. He believes in you. He believes you can be a person of love and joy and forgiveness and hope. He believes it. So do you believe it? Do we believe we can be what Jesus believes we can be? I want to leave you, if you have become a disciple, if you already have accepted Jesus' call, then what I want to leave with you is a blessing, a Jewish blessing, that may you be covered in the dust of your rabbi. Follow Him. Don't just follow Him from a distance. Follow Him up close. And if you haven't become a disciple of Jesus, what's keeping you? Jesus, and if anywhere in your mind you think, well, I'm not good enough for Jesus, consider who Jesus calls. He calls everybody. He's calling you. And so if you hear the call of Jesus and you want to drop your nets and follow Him, there's no better time than right now. Just do it immediately, as Peter and Andrew and James and John did. And start following your rabbi and going in the places that He believes that you can go with His power and His guidance. If you're in any way subject to the invitation call, or if we can help you in any way with your spiritual walk with God, please let us know. And come forward as we stand and sing.